Hello, everybody. Stu Smith and Jeff Nichols here with the Tactical Fitness Report. And today we're going to expand on an earlier show that we did, podcast number, I can't remember. But it's the one we did on the powerlifting football player getting ready for buds. So what we've been asked by several big guys, like, hey, I know what we need to do, but how do we do it? You know, how do we go from I'm a 290-pound guy, play football for a college, how do I get down to what do you recommend me to get down to? You know, what is a logical weight to be a bud student? So both Jeff and I have had a lot of experience with big guys that are trying to prepare for these type of special ops jobs. And there is a go-to weight, you know, depending on what service you're going to serve in. And my recommendation is for a guy that big, try to get down to 220, mm-hmm. right? If you can get below 220, that's great. But I mean, if you're 6'5" and below 220, you're probably going to be a little bit too skinny, yeah. right? So you probably won't be able to hold that mass. So it just depends on your height and, what your body weight needs to be. But yeah, I mean, you're going to have to lose some bulk, you know, maybe even a little bit of muscle mass. Just depends on what your percentages is there. But, the guys that I've seen that do really well that are big were formerly big at 250, 260 and dropped themselves down to, below 200 or I'm sorry, below 220. If they, I will say this, I talked to a guy that was a college football player just the other day, just finished buds. He's an SQT. And I said, what do you recommend? And he goes, well, I tell you what, I did best getting as close to 200 as possible. He was a fullback, weighed 240 playing, and he got down to about 205, 210.
Yeah.
So that's – yeah. Now, why is that? Why do you need to be light or lighter?
Yeah, I think there's that necessary endurance component, and when you're dealing with that much muscle mass, you're going to accumulate a fair amount of byproduct, blood lactate,
yeah.
that it's a pretty heavy mass to carry, and, it's – an interesting quick story, and I know I've mentioned him before, not by name, but just by, former lifestyle. I was a former bodybuilder, and he's been working his ass off. I'm super proud of him, and he calls me the other day. We talk once a week, try to at least, and, he's got a full-time job, 30 years old, trying to get a waiver into the Navy to go to Buds. We all kind of know of the difficulty for getting waivers in the Navy. So what Stu and I recommend is say, hey, go see an Army recruiter, because typically they're a little bit more progressive or lenient maybe on waivers. I don't know exactly what term to use, but.
Or just to have a higher minimum standard.
Right.
Too. I mean, they have a higher age limit,
Yep. So,
guys like older people. Yeah.
And it makes sense to me, and that's why, I don't deserve an answer necessarily, or we don't deserve an answer of why the Navy feels that way they do, and that's fine. That's their prerogative, but the Army's a little bit different. So he gets in his car. He drives to Houston. Like, he's in Houston. I think he's going to drive across town because he got an appointment to have a initial conversation with an Army SF recruiter, mentor in Houston, and shows up. And as Stu and I have talked about many, many times, if you're going to go see a recruiter, you'd be ready to PT. And sure enough, the SF guy, mentor, said, hey, you ready to PT? And he's like, yep. He had his clothes. He had his shoes. He's been hydrating, all that stuff. And he's like, give me your watch. So he gives him his watch, and he goes, run as fast as you can until I tell you to stop. That was it. And he's like, okay. Takes off running. He's like, all right, stop. Jump up on the pull-up bar. Go. He starts doing pull-ups. And the guy goes, get down. And – the actual recruiter, talks to a friend and client, and he goes, hey, what was my time? He goes, you were under 6. And this guy's 247. And he knocked out 15 pull-ups just easily, and he's like, yeah, get down. And then so that's the perfect scenario of putting all of this work in. He's starting at 300 pounds, putting in really good work in, shown up ready when it matters, he did it right. Yeah. And now the recruiter's like, we'll get back to you because we're going to get this going next week.
Absolutely.
That's where he's at.
You know what that recruiter's going to do? He's going to bust his ass for this guy.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. He sees a great you know, product, wants to come into the military, and it's less work for him.
And this is my thought, and this is something that I think we've touched on it, but I just really want to, like, capitalize it and highlight it and put italics to this statement and say, friend and client respects Special Forces community enough that he prepared. So SF guy and the recruiter, this guy respects our community enough that he showed up prepared.
Yeah,
and I love it. He respected it. And that is the where sometimes you got to stop asking questions when it comes to training. You just got to train.
Right.
You got to respect and train. You got to respect the training too. So I just think that that's a beautiful scenario that gets played out a lot. And I think those are the guys typically that you don't hear about. They just busted their butt and they showed up and they crushed the PST and they go, yep. 8 weeks later, they're, you know, boot camp.
Yeah. No drama.
Yep.
Yeah. They got it done. There's no wishy-washy. There's no waiting for some recruiter to get back to you because, you know, you showed up with the wrong paperwork.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, anyway,
he was saying, cause he did a time, I think he did it. He timed his mile or like a mile. He himself, when he actually timed it, I believe he said he ran like a 5:10 mile at 2:45. So
yeah, that's real impressive.
Mass is awesome if you can move it. And that's, but you know, if he wasn't able to move that body mass, and you know, a couple of weeks ago, we completely shifted him to a far more rigorous aerobic base. And that's, well, Stu and I will get into that, why that aerobic base is so valuable now.
Yeah. You know what? That's funny you mentioned that. Cause I told the guy today, in fact, I'm going to give you a triathlete workout, right? And here's why I like the triathlon style training for these guys, because 2/3 of your aerobic training will be non-impact.
Yep.
Right? So you're getting your third, you're going to be running, but you're going to be swimming and biking, or pick another non-impact activity. Doesn't have to be biking if you don't want to bike. But yeah, I mean, that right there is going to be your journey, or I should say your ticket to reducing your fat content and your body mass to a point where it's just going to be a little bit more manageable, because here's where it haunts you at Buds. Primarily, the heavy weight will get you when you are running in soft sand, just kind of beats up on your legs, right? But you have strong legs, you can kind of handle it to a degree, as long as you got some good cardio foundation. Where it gets the big people the most is the obstacle course, because a 240-pound guy hanging on little ropes and little boards like this, and you know, your grip is done in about 5 minutes, and this is about a 7-8 minute test, that obstacle course.
Now, if you're good, fast, you're going to run the sevens on the oak course.
So that's the biggest concern. In fact, we just had a great candidate from the Naval Academy get to Buds, and he was 240, could flat out run like your guy, and PT 30 pull-ups, big, strong guy, and good PT-er, strong, you name it, ruck, whatever you have him do. But they actually kicked him out, an officer, for not being able to pass the obstacle course in the month that he was there.
Yeah.
Kicked him out. Yeah. And they even gave him a month to lose weight to try it again, see if you can come back 10 pounds lighter, do it again. And he still didn't do it. And he's now heading towards the fleet. And so that, I think, is the biggest reason. That's a tough
one for a Naval Academy officer to get back to Buds. Is not possible, is it?
I don't think so.
Yeah. And aside from a flag officer or congressional intervention?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the good news is he never really started Buds.
Oh, okay.
Never really started first phase. Yeah. So I mean, he was all part of Buds orientation. He never made it into pre-Buds or whatever.
Okay. Hopefully he gets a crack at it.
Maybe. But yeah, so that's the why I think you need to lose weight. It just for one certain situation. But as Jeff alluded to earlier, you know, that it does create a lot of product byproduct of all this activity that can really wear you out, get you really sore. Rhabdo happens to bigger guys more.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to look at the vascular nature of someone with more muscle mass, right? A larger engine on a vehicle will typically burn more gasoline, yeah. Right? Its fuel consumption is higher. It produces, like we've already said, more byproduct to that combustion, right? And the combustion for the human body is blood, lactate, and creatine kinase, and a bunch of other biochemical sort of things. But that's what we, you know, and that's so the point is of all this is like with somebody big that's needs to lose just mass, fat mass and muscle mass potentially, we're emphasizing gaining a real good aerobic base to begin with, because that really good aerobic base helps you do exactly what Stu is saying, right? It keeps impact moderately low, okay? But it also, again, think about this. Like, let's say this person is, you know, kind of like me, like fairly strong, not doing a whole lot of aerobic work other than swimming. As my aerobic base gets built up, and it has gotten built up, my recovery time, but from set to set to set in a resistance environment, then shortens a ton because I have the capacity to buffer all of those byproducts, those negative byproducts. And so let's say someone weighs 275, 280, they're strong, but you know, even when they get in resistance environment, they start doing metabolic work, like they're pooped. They can't keep going set after set after set. But if you start with a really good aerobic base, with the running, the swimming, the biking, elliptic glider, rucking, all these sort of things, and you do that for, you know, 10, 12 weeks, what you're going to find is that your recovery time, I'm not talking the day from day to day, I'm talking you do a really good metabolic circuit of you know, lower body push. You take a short break, you know, minute off, we'll say, well, boom, you're right back in that metabolic circuit just with minimal diminishing return because you have such a good aerobic base, even with that larger muscle mass. Because, you know, at that point, after 12 weeks, you may lose 10, 15, 20 pounds, but you're still heavier than relative yes. to most of your buds peers.
And strong. I mean, you're
still
not,
very strong.
You're
yes.
not going to lose a whole lot of strength. Like I said, I wasn't that big. I mean, I probably the biggest I ever got in college might have been 215 when I wanted to transition out of that powerlifting football phase into, you know, be a good bud student. And I got down to 195, you know, so it was 20 pounds. You know, it looked different. I was able to see more definition. So, I mean, I definitely lost body fat, but I really never lost a lot of strength. And if whatever strength I did lose, if I went on a strength training program for 5 to 6 weeks, I was back at all my old maxes by yeah. then. Now, this was in my early 20s, and that's probably a lot easier to do back then. And also back then, I could actually outwork my diet.
Yes. So that, yeah. Especially at Buds.
Yeah. You know, yeah. and even pre-Buds.
Pre-Buds at the academy and all that. Yeah, for sure.
Training, you know, you can outwork your diet if you're in your 20s, low 20s. You know, once you start getting into your 30s, it's going to be a lot harder. Like your guy, probably a lot harder for him to outwork his diet. And he really needs to pull back on portion control, but also understand, you know, his nutrient timing, when he needs these grams of protein, carbs, and fats, you know, throughout his day. But you know, I tell you what, I'm going to make it real simple for you and just say this, and I don't like Jeff always says, don't like to speak in absolutes, but there's two things that you're going to need to do. One, you're going to have to try to outwork your diet, right? But you're also going to have to stop eating like a football player.
Yeah.
You know, whenever you got big, remember when you were in high school and they said, hey, you got to be 280 to play defensive tackle?
Yeah.
Well, you had to eat your ass off, take a lot of supplements and do all that stuff, lift heavy weights to get that big. Well, that's a habit that you create. You got to get out of that habit and start eating like a bird.
Yeah.
Right.
And especially when you drive like that work up. When you drive that work, that new aerobic workload up, your body's going to get even more hungry.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like stuck between a rock and a hard place for a couple weeks till your body goes, oh, we're not doing what we used to do.
Right.
We need to think about how we're metabolizing this food and how much. And and that's the, so the, again, this is a very common thread amongst everything that we talk about. Well, probably the most common thread throughout everyone, aside from maybe a wrestler, but even then, that's like depends on the weight class then too, is like, you need a year. Give yourself time.
Yeah.
Right? Give yourself time.
Yeah. A year makes all the difference in the world, because if you have 80 pounds to lose, it's going to take you a year to do it in a healthy manner.
Yes.
And get in shape at the same time. And not, I'm not talking about just football shape. I'm talking about in pre-bud shape. And you can do both at the same time. You can have the curve going like this, your weight loss coming down and your fitness going up.
Yep.
I mean, that's definitely.
And that's why you need that timeline.
Yeah.
It's because what's going to happen is you're over the first third of that year, your body is still going to be like, what the heck are we doing?
Feed me.
Yeah. And you're just going to have to be persistent and consistent. And you might have to change your caloric timing entirely.
Yeah.
So, because sometimes it may not be your so much like change what you're eating. It might just be change when you eat it, when you eat, and then exhibit portion control. But again, it's probably not best. Like, let's say that someone that's 270, and again, we're going to give you really rough, I'm going to give you real rough numbers. Let's say you're at 270 and you're consuming 4,000 calories a day, 3,600. You made this change. You got to go to Bud's. You got to drop all this weight. The first day you start, you shouldn't go down to 2,000 calories.
Yeah.
You start whittling that stuff away, 100, 200 calories every week or two.
Yep.
And then that's exactly what Stu is saying. He's made this shift now where the aerobic demand goes way up. That's why you don't want to just drop your calories out. You'll probably get overtrained very quickly. You might get sick.
Yeah.
And you don't want to. So that's why also you need that timeline.
Absolutely. In fact, I would say this, your first month, don't even really change so much what you're eating. You've just increased your workload twice as much, probably burning an extra 1,500 calories in a day.
Yeah.
So that is just like not eating 1,500 calories, right, if you think about it. And if you can do that, like I said, you are outworking your diet, right?
Yep.
And that's the beauty of being in your 20s. You can do that. Like, I am on a weight loss program now, about to turn 50. And I can no longer outwork my diet. And I'm working out twice a day, probably 2.5 hours total. I'm probably burning anywhere between 15 and 2,000 calories a day. But I like to eat, And so
that's the upside of good aerobic training too.
Yeah. I mean, I do like to eat, and I've decreased my carbs to a point where I'm borderline ketosis, been playing around with ketosis diets for about 6 weeks now. They are good. However, the one thing that is the big part of that is also portion control. If I eat 6,000 calories of steak and chicken,
bacon, you still got 6,000 calories you got to metabolize still. Yeah.
I still got to metabolize that. So maybe for the next 2 days, I am not going to lose weight because I'm still in ketosis.
But you still got 6,000 calories of animal fat in you, which is good, but not 6,000 or 3,000 even. It's just
exactly. Yeah.
And many times too, is here's the thing too, when you're really, really light and really heavier than you need to be, whatever, again, I don't need to get numbers to that, but this will make sense. The common thread between the excessively light guy and the guy that's too heavy is really just, you might really want to look and see actually what your gross macro number is.
Yeah.
That might be, if you're kind of, 170 pounds, and my answer is going to be just eat more, eat less. But when you're 125 pounds and we want to put 20 pounds on you, or 270, you want to drop 30 pounds, it's probably a good idea to start writing down your macros. The light guy might go, holy poop, I'm only consuming 1600 calories. The big guy is going to go, I'm at 3800. And so math is great. You look at it and go, man, I thought I was just eating a lot.
But you know what? There's no gray area there. That's such a smart idea. I did that with this program that I'm on. I was going to do a week of counting every calorie that came in my body. And I'll tell you what, in about 3 days, I quit doing it because I knew what my problem was. Peanut butter.
Yeah.
I was snacking on peanut butter. I go grab a spoonful of peanut butter after breakfast. You know, grab another spoonful in between lunch and dinner. Grab one before bed. You know, then I do the math and I said, damn, that's almost 600 calories a day. I just put in my body. No wonder I'm not losing weight and I'm busting my ass. So I just quit buying peanut butter and I started losing 2 pounds a week.
I just did the opposites, Stu. I just bought more peanut butter this week. The peanut butter I got has CBD oil in it.
That's even cooler.
And that's where I'm like, but see, I'm using that as a pre-workout now.
Right.
Because I didn't want carbs because I still wasn't satiated. I was like training like the last couple of weeks because I've been doing 2 days. And I'm like, man, I'm sitting in the pool going, my tummy's grumbling. I'm like, I just had like, you know, 800 calorie breakfast. And I'm like, this doesn't make sense. But it was so, my body knew it was coming. It just burns it up. Now, if I throw that 2 tablespoons of peanut butter right before I swim, you know, I'm getting hungrier, but now I'm ready for lunch and I'm not like, oh man, my hunger isn't driving my appetite.
There you go.
I take another, they come in individual servings, little tabs you tear off. And a buddy, I got Trent Murphy. He just got traded to the Bills. He was a linebacker for the Redskins. Now he is for the Bills. And he turned me on to it. He's like, this stuff is awesome.
Nice.
So I started taking it and I'm like, pre-workout. So I'll take it today before I train and I'm not hungry when I train now. And it's great because I'm not like cutting my program short or anything. I'm like, dinner rolls around and I'm not being driven by my appetite.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, Jeff and I were talking about this before because, you know, we are on this journey ourselves and, you know, that's what the part is. You got to find out what is going to work for you on this weight gain or weight loss journey. Right. And sometimes that's a little bit of hit or miss. It's a little bit of maybe learning some of the research that's out there. Will this help me? Will this still allow me to have the energy that I need to train? You know, for a big guy, you know, first morning when you wake up, you know, and you still have a lot of bulk on you, some fasting cardio is not a bad idea. I mean, you go right into this like fat burning zone.
Cause you're right. Yeah. You're right there.
Yeah. As long as you kind of keep that, intensity to a moderate level. Don't go too
high. And that's the big one.
Yeah.
So when you wake up, so I don't know if we've never explained this.
No.
So why fasting cardio? The reason why fasting cardio is because you're basically on the scales are teetering on ketosis, that fat burning zone, because you went all night without food.
Yeah.
But if you get on a treadmill or whatever and you run and you train really, really hard, now there are certain circumstances where it's not going to happen, but in the state of a bodybuilder, they are basically ketogenic because they're purposely being ketogenic with their meals, going and prepping for a show, especially 12 weeks out, because that's kind of when it starts. Fasted cardio for a bodybuilder is going to start about 12 to 16 weeks out. So they're waking up with no food in their stomach and they just walk on a treadmill for 30 minutes. Instantly they burn fat. They're already in that sort of like that, like I mentioned, that scales teetering and goes, ooh, we're walking moderately, not heavy. They walk. They don't run. Yeah. And then it goes whoop right into the fat burning zone. And then they get done with it and the body goes, oh, we're not working anymore. Then they eat, replenish the glycogen. And that cycle starts out. So they start their morning off all the time in that ketogenic state. That's why fasted cardio.
So anyway, like I said, if you have fat to burn, not a bad option for you. Right. I mean, like I said, you have to find out what works for you. You may not like that. You know, sometimes I'll be honest with you. I like having, you know, a couple of carbs before a hard workout in the morning, especially if I'm going anaerobic and I'm doing weights or high rep calisthenics or something. But if I know I have a 4 mile run in front of me, I'm going to take it nice and easy. I'm not doing sprints. I'm not doing intervals, not doing anything like that. You know, I won't worry about, you know, feeding myself before that event.
So right.
It just kind of depends on what you're doing.
That's it. Nail on the head. You're just like, hey, I need to get faster. Well, you got to work speed. You're like, well, I need to drop fat mass. Okay. Well, I need to, my training and my diet has to marry up. It's got to be in line with that goal. So if you're like, I don't understand, I'm doing all these sort of things, I'm training my butt off, but I'm not, then we got to go, okay, is the food that you're consuming in the same direction of where, like, hey, you're up here trying to drop weight, but your meal plan is opposite. And you're like, okay, it's not okay. There's a reason. And that's the beauty of physiology in the body, is that there is always, this is the one of those few, there is always a cause and effect when it comes to this, the stimulus, how you train, you eat, how you sleep. It's obvious.
Yeah. I've always liked this. If you're trying to gain weight, eat more, lift more. In fact, there, remember the old saying, if you want to be big, you got to eat big and lift big.
Yeah. Arnold.
Love that one. If you're trying to lose it, eat less, lift less, mm-hmm. right? And do more higher rep calisthenics type stuff, working on your ability to buffer
and that's
all that byproduct.
In my this particular individual we're talking about, that is one of the best times to implement a lot of calisthenics. When you're building that good aerobic base, the calisthenics for this individual, because he is still probably fairly heavy, the calisthenics are going to provide enough stimulus to maintain that level of strength that Stu's talking about,
right?
Without affecting your aerobic goals.
Yeah. And you know what? We get this one all the time too. People like to do calisthenics every day for some reason, which I don't understand why you would do hundreds of repetitions of calisthenics day after day after day after day, you know, and then wonder why you're not seeing results. Yep. You know, you really have to treat high volume calisthenics the same way you treat, you know, any heavy weightlifting.
Barbell back squat. You don't do that every day.
Right. I mean, just every other day. Every 2 or 3 days, you know, whatever your cycle is, you definitely, for the young guy, you can get away with every other day and be fully recovered before the next high rep calisthenics right. or heavy weightlifting cycle, whatever that is. Yeah. But
or you make sure at least cycle them.
Yeah.
That is, you have a built-in calendar then. It's like, hey, Mondays, I always just do a ton of pull-ups.
Yeah.
Tuesdays, I always do a ton of push-ups. Wednesday's an off day, right? As far as calisthenics are concerned, maybe. Or you might do sit-ups or other sort of band work that is basically works into the calisthenics, like parallel push-ups or something, whatever it is. And then you start it over.
Yeah. And then, you know, to get the legs a little more muscular endurance, mix running with calisthenic squats and lunges.
Yeah, lunges,
you know, we call it run and leg PT, where, you know, you work your lungs and your legs, because that's the two things you got to work, you know, for getting to be a better runner. Just have a little bit more running endurance and muscle stamina in your legs.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's what we do for the big guy, and try to get the big guy down to an average size guy, so to speak. And you're still going to be way above. You're still going to be the biggest guy at Bud's, even at 220.
Yeah. You
know, there are rarely guys bigger than 220 at Bud's for a reason. And I really think that unless you're a freak of nature, you know, it's difficult to make it through Bud's at above 220.
And don't count on this. It's still part of your journey. What I'm about to say is, let's say you really do pretty good on the PST at 225, 230, right? Well, now you're going into Bud's prep, then you're going to basically indoc, right? That's the opportunity to continue to work on that aerobic base. And it's also a great opportunity where you're going to get a first time in your life when you show up to, you know, when you get to boot camp, the meals that you're going to be eating. Because every Navy facility in the United States has the same menu pretty much every day. Like, if the same menu today for lunch in Pensacola is the exact same menu in Coronado. That's just how the Navy, they run the same, as far as I understand.
Yeah.
It's the same menu plus or minus, right?
Right.
So when you show up to boot camp, that food is what it is. But when you get through boot camp and you're at indoc at Great Lakes, the food's going to really improve and it's going to be really accessible. Now you're going to see also why certain fad diets are not going to be useful, because you're like, hey, man, I'm hungry. I got to eat. I'm training my butt off.
Yes.
That is also another sort of thing to look at and go, well, train your butt off, crush the PST, be prepared for change. And that's okay. Now you can really work on some of the aerobic base again, and there's plenty of time.
Yeah. Yeah. Timeline. Give yourself time. It'll happen.
For sure.
Cool. All right, Jeff. Thanks again.
Awesome.
All right. I will chat with you guys later.